We look at different ways as we emerge from this long pandemic and how we negotiate that and what we do and what we don't do. It is encouraging to me that we are doing many of the things that we are here at Northeast as we move forward, and appreciate you being a part of that, appreciate your patience as we navigate these waters that in a lot of way are uncertain. And one of the things that we are doing, we are I guess if you've looked at your bulletin, you've noticed that there are a lot more things going on. And as the summer moves on, it's going to be the same way too. And one of those things is something that we did last year, but because we were more at the peak of the pandemic and there were a lot more fears and concerns about it then, it was before the vaccinations and all of that, we had about 25 families participate in what we called food and fellowship groups. And we're going to do it again this summer. And if you were to go to the website right now and just go to that front page and then scroll down just a little bit to the Grow Deeper icon and click the little place there where it says to grow deeper, and the statement says their next step. You click on that, that'll take you right to a page where it explains a little bit about the food and fellowship groups, and there's an opportunity to sign up. And we'll be getting you more information about that, but these groups are 3 to 4 families, no more than 3 to 4 families. We mix things up. We put people together who know each other, but we also put them with some folks they may not know as well. So it gives us an opportunity as a church to build our relationships in Jesus. And, of course, we faced a lot of isolation in a lot of ways over the last year plus, but this is a very practical way for us to kind of get back in the mode of just practical together fellowship, and we've been doing that in some of our life groups, but that's what we're going to do this summer. So I encourage you to please check that out and sign up for that, and they'll ask you some questions so you can kind of say what you're comfortable doing. Also, hate to say this morning, Phil and Wendy Joyner, this is their last Sunday here. They're moving to North Carolina. Are y'all in the main auditorium here, or are y'all downstairs? Online, I think they're here. They must be in they're in the downstairs area. Well, we hope this is coming through to the joiners, and want you to know that we bid you Godspeed, and we will miss you. And whether it's this group assembled here or those downstairs and people who've joined us online who know you, we thank you for being such an important part of what's going on here at Northeast. Just a few weeks ago, we introduced a new family to Northeast, and the interesting thing in the providence of God and working things out, at least in this case, is that the new family that arrived, Nathan and Rebecca Reinhart and their family, they purchased the Joyner's home. And that got me to thinking, maybe we ought to establish some sort of official program here at Northeast. And we will call it the membership replacement program, and we can work it out. If a family leaves, they have to leave their house to an incoming family. They can negotiate the price. But it really is serendipitous how things worked out for the Reinharts. And we're always happy to have new people with us here at Northeast. There may be new people joining us online. And we just thank you for being here and being a part of this time. What do you think of the term blindside? What comes to your mind? Maybe you think of the movie several years ago that Sandra Bullock was in, and it told the story, the actual true story of Michael Orr, and it's a story of him growing up, the influences in his life, but part of it was his role as a left tackle in high school, in college, and later on as a guard for the Baltimore Ravens and some other teams as well. But one of the key roles of the left guard in a football team is to protect the quarterback's blind side, if you're a right-handed quarterback. And there's been a lot done and said in the NFL over the last few years about protecting not just quarterbacks, but protecting players from blind side hits and targeting, and they do a lot more in the way of penalties and fines. And they do that because when you're blindsided, playing football, you're subject to being hurt and being injured in a very serious way. A player can get tossed out of a game for targeting, sometimes can be suspended and fined greatly, because it's important to be protected on the blind side. What does it mean to be blindsided? Well, you know what I did? I looked up a simple definition of blindside, and this is what it says. As a noun, a direction in which a person has a poor view, typically of approaching danger. And then the verb, it says, to hit or attack someone on the blind side. And there are a lot of things. If we're looking at this word blindside, wouldn't you say there are a lot of ways we can be blindsided in life? Not see something that's coming? We never knew it was coming, and yet it came. And sometimes it could have very, very devastating effects. Fortunes can change in a matter of moments. What happens within a country can change in the matter of a very short time, as we've seen with the emergence of a virus that affected our country in other countries in very powerful ways. That was on our blind side. And so when we come to what that means related to the book of Ruth, the book of Ruth reminds us not only about our blind side and what we see and what we don't see, and how God, many times in our minds, we don't see him working, and yet God calls us to live by faith and trust him when sometimes it's very, very difficult. And that's how this story starts. This is how scene one starts in the book of Ruth. But we read this statement at the beginning, in the time when the judges ruled. That was a time of uncertainty and chaos and war. And while they didn't have 24-hour news channels and didn't have the connections we do in terms of communication and technology, in the times of the judges in the area of Palestine and all around there, it was a time of bad news. There were ups and downs. There was conflict. There was all of this uncertainty. And then as the book of Judges closes, it says, in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. That's the culture, the context, the living reality of this time, and that is the culture, the reality, the times in which this story unfolds. You can't always see what's going to happen. You don't always know when you're going to be blindsided. And so the book of Ruth, and just talking about what this book is about, this book reminds us that God is on our blind side. That God is working, and we can live by faith. And there are things that we will learn over this four-part series that will remind you and will remind me that whatever the case, we can live with faithfulness and loyalty and love, and it can make a difference. In your life, it can make a difference. In the life of your loved ones, it can make a difference. Because this story, as the way it starts, I mean, you talk about being blindsided. This book begins with being blindsided. We're introduced to Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their two sons. And the book begins by saying they left their home in Bethlehem of Judah and left there and went to enemy territory because there was food. And so they were blindsided, this family, right off the bat in this story. They're blindsided by famine. How many of us can really relate personally to famine? I mean, in our own lives. How many who have assembled here this morning, have you ever had to worry about where your next meal was coming from or whether you were going to be able to eat or not. If you're joining us online, you're probably in the same boat that I'm in saying, truly, I can look at my own life and I can say, I've never, ever experienced the kind of desperation that would come from a famine in an area that would bring this kind of move. Basically, Elimelech and Naomi and the boys, they become hunger refugees in Moab. And that's a place where, knowing the history of Moab and Israel, that might be a place they wouldn't necessarily want to go, but they were desperate. And so that's where they went. I think about the situation worldwide right now. I did just a little research this week, and I saw in that research that right now in the world, there are 21 million displaced in another country, refugees. They come from Syria, they come from the southern Sudan, they come from Afghanistan, they come from Venezuela. They live in places where there is chaos and war and terrorism and famine, and they have nothing left to do if they're going to survive except make the desperate effort to move to a different place that they don't know. Imagine how frightening that would be. And imagine having to do it because you're hungry and you don't know if you're going to eat. I'm just trying to pull us in to what is happening in the life of this family and what it would mean probably leaving their land fallow with nothing growing on it to go to this place not knowing their future. I've never personally known someone who would be defined as a, quote, refugee until the last couple of months when I had the opportunity to meet Tim Picotti. Tim and Christina and their family, they are members at Northeast. They placed membership a couple of months ago. We received a letter from a Church of Christ in Texas by one of the members who was there and told us to look out for them. They were coming this way, told a little bit about their story. And I'm looking forward later in this series to sitting down and having a conversation with Timothy up here in a few weeks. But they lived the life as refugees from the country of Bhutan, and because of religious persecution, and we'll tell you more about that story later on in this series, but because of religious persecution, they had to leave their home and they had to go to Nepal, and there they lived in a refugee camp. And life in a refugee camp, from what I've read and what I've heard, it can be a very, very hard existence even there, but they are there to survive. Now, I'm not going to tell you about how the Picotti story goes and ends. I'm going to share that with you sometime later. And I know those of you who are familiar with the story of Ruth and this account in a book that's named after the only Gentile woman we have in the Bible. What makes her so special? Well, we'll find out more about that. But right now, I just want to focus in on what this family is going through. They are being blindsided. They've been blindsided by famine. But as was read this morning by Rick, they were also blindsided by death. And it's hard to lose anyone. It cuts at your heart when you lose somebody you love. And I know a lot of you, all of you, have experienced the loss of somebody in a very profound way. And maybe they've been gone for years and you still feel that emptiness. You still miss them. And so it would be that way with Naomi losing her husband. And if that wasn't bad enough, the story tells us that eventually those two boys, they marry Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. And then 10 years go by in those marriages. They're still refugees in Moab, but they've managed to marry. And then those boys, those young men, they die. No children. Back in this day, in this culture, I think it's hard for many of us to appreciate what it would mean to be and live as a widow without a husband, without children, and especially without sons in a situation like this. I think what the Bible says in terms of responding to those who are the neediest of the needy. And in Isaiah chapter 10, God says this to his prophet, "Woe to those who make unjust laws, to those who issue oppressive decrees, to deprive the poor of their rights and withhold justice from the oppressed of my people, making widows their prey and robbing the fatherless." Under such a strong patriarchal system, where everything in terms of family security, not only in where you're going to be and how you're going to live, but what you're going to have and what you're going to live on, is wrapped up, not just having children, but especially in this day, in this culture, in having sons. Because culturally, it was through those sons that there was this property rights and inheritance and carrying on the family name. And that's why in so many stories in the Bible, you see so many women like Hannah and Rachel and Leah. You see how they are. They want to have a son. Because having a son back in this day meant future stability for the family. It meant the one who would be able to inherit the property and continue taking care of parents or other needs beyond that. So here they are in an unbelievably vulnerable position. Naomi's out of her country. She has two daughters-in-law who haven't had, they've been childless for 10 years. What's she going to do? Well, let's pick up in the story and let's see what happens and what she says. Y'all follow along with me and it'll be up here on the screen. And then when she, that is Naomi, heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she'd been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. So let me just pause here just a minute. Naomi feels like, even with all the difficulties, she's gotten word that there is food in the land. There's food in Bethlehem. The famine has ended. And what refugee who has lived in a foreign country for 10 years might not sometimes have thoughts of going home, of going back to where you grew up? And that's what she was thinking. Now, many people today, refugees, if they have the thought of returning to their home country or where they lived or that city, many of them, they don't have anywhere to go back to. It's a bombed out city. There's still war and terrorism and a lot of those, but at least Naomi had a place where she could go, where she would at least find the hope of ending her existence, playing out her days in a place that was her home and her land. And by the way, according to law, those daughters-in-law would still be bound to her through that marriage. And so there would still be this natural tie between Naomi and Ruth and Orpah. And so she begins to go, and they go with her. And I wonder why she didn't say something to these daughters-in-law sooner. But whatever the reason may have been, she doesn't say something to them till they move on a little farther. In verse 8 it says, "And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go back each of you to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you. that you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. And so she is willing to release them. She is willing to emancipate them, so to speak, to stay in Moab. Now, the prospects for a widow who has not been able to conceive and have a child for 10 years, word is going to get around about that, and she would probably not be very high on some people's list as far as marrying. But in history, in the context of this day, maybe they could find someone to marry and maybe not be wife number one, but maybe wife number two or three and be a servant and at least have their needs provided for. And certainly, think about it, the prospects of two foreign widows who have not been able to bear children and going to Bethlehem, what are the chances there of remarriage? And why would remarriage have been so important in the lives of these women? As widows with just them, with no protection in their lives, they were vulnerable. People are vulnerable today around the world. And one of the people groups that's most vulnerable in the world are widows. Back in this day, it was widows. You were on the bottom rung of the ladder in terms of where you are by being a number of things back in this day. One of those things was being a foreigner. Another was being poor. Another was being a widow. And another was being an orphan. Those are the four that jump out at you. And a lot is said in the Old Testament about caring for these people, the New Testament as well. Why is that? They would be vulnerable. And so they're taking a risk, but listen to what Naomi says to these daughters-in-law. She kissed them, it says, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return to your home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband, even if I thought there was hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons. Would you wait until they grew up?" In the context, in the culture of that day, this makes sense. "Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it's more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." What are they going to do? What's she going to do? Well, I'll tell you what Orpah did. Orpah listened and responded in a way that a person is making a reasonable decision. She decides to stay. Ruth, on the other hand, we're told, clings to her mother-in-law. And she goes with her. They take the trip. And when they arrive in Bethlehem, let's read and see what it says about this. So they arrive finally in Bethlehem, Naomi and Ruth, and the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" And then verse 20 says this, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. The Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me, and the Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." Now, I want you to think about what she says there just a minute, and I want to just ask you this question. What is your assessment? What's your assessment of Naomi? How do you feel about Naomi? I think as I've looked more deeply into this story and the life of this woman over the past several weeks, I've come to appreciate her more as not just simply being a suffering, bitter, old woman. You know, folks, as they get older, they kind of have a reputation of getting more grumpy and complaining. And Jeannie and I have laughed at ourselves at times as we have conversations about life and about who we are. We talk more now about our aches and our pains now than we certainly did 20 or 30 years ago. And when I heard old people talking about their aches or pains or ask them how they're doing, and the first thing they're going to say was, well, this hurts, that hurts. You know, it's like, I don't want to be that kind of, I don't want to be that person. But is that all Naomi is? No. When you look at what she has gone through, when you look at where her life is now, and when you look at the prospects for a secure and meaningful future and everything in that day that would have, at least on the outside, provided somebody that kind of stability, it just wasn't going to be there. And so in a lot of ways, she had given up hope. When I look at what she says, I don't see her as the person who just complains about every little thing. She has been through the ringer, and in her mind, at least, at this point, a person who is a daughter of Abraham, a person who has faith, a person who believes that God blesses and provides for those who He loves, and God is faithful to the faithful. Where is God in all of this? At least in our mind. Where is God when we are living in misery or hurting and we're trying to do the right thing or living the right way or whatever the case may be? You see, she believed God was in control. We use that term, don't we? God is in control. And God blesses the faithful. I just think sometimes to look at Naomi and just kind of dismiss her as just being a bitter old woman. And she's bitter. She says it. And she believes that God's involved in all of this. And listen, there's a temptation in my mind. As I was putting this lesson together, I thought maybe I need to pause and I need to talk a little bit about theologically and explain why bad things happen to good people. I'm not going to do that, but there's this temptation in me, and I'll address it sometime in other contexts, but I don't want to here. I want us to appreciate where she is and how much she is hurting. I want to mention two things about her. Number one, I think she reminds us that faithfulness, that being faithful, is about being honest. She is being honest here. I mean, God knows what she's thinking. He knows how her mind is working. She feels that God not only has abandoned her, but she basically accuses God of blindsiding her. Read it. And I'm not saying I agree with that assessment in every way of what she's saying, but at least she's saying it. And at least she's not pretending to be okay when she's not okay. So we greet each other and we might say, hey, how you doing? And what's our typical response? Brian, how you doing, man? I'm fine. I'm fine. It rolls off our lips. But you and I know that we're not always fine. And it's one thing to have the mindset that every little negative thing that happens to you, you want to let everybody know so they feel sorry for you. And, you know, I don't look at Facebook much, but I know that there's this trend with some people. On one side, they want to show how wonderful and pretty and beautiful their life is. By the way, the name Naomi means beautiful or lovely. And then you might get the other extreme of people that just want to share every little negative, whatever it may be, in their lives. I don't think Naomi falls into either of these categories. But she's in misery. And so I just want to encourage you individually about your honesty with God and where you are and how you need to be not only with God but with others. And that doesn't mean you share every little thing on your heart. But we know. We look at people. We see it. We know it. Sometimes we know it because of their circumstances, but there are people who are suffering in misery and we have no idea what's going on. And so this is where a place for reminding us that not only do we need each other, but we need to be honest with God. The Bible is full of faithful people who love God, who believe He blesses them, who ask some of the hardest questions you will ever ask. Read them yourself. The book of Psalms, more of the Psalms are Psalms of lament than any other kind of psalm. And the Psalm of Lament is a psalm of suffering and complaint and asking the question why and not understanding. But one thing I find interesting about Naomi, she never asked that question, why? Look at what she says. She believes God's in the picture and she believes God that is working, but He's not working in the way that she feels like He should be working. But unlike many other faithful people who ask the question, why? She never does. But when she's asked how she is, she certainly is honest about where she is, whether all that's true or not. Here's the second thing. And this is going to come out in this series. This is going to be one of the threads that runs through this series. What does it mean to be faithful? I believe part of being faithful is being honest wherever we are and whatever we're struggling with in our faith. But faithful is also being loyal. Faithful is also doing the right thing out of love, out of commitment, out of a promise to someone. And we've made promises to God as Christians. We've made promises to others in our lives, our spouses, our children, commitment as friends. And as I look at Naomi, and I look at maybe I think the wrong total angle on her life, I still see her as doing the right thing, even when she's at the darkest point in her life. She, when she could have used the help of Orpah and Ruth, in my mind, does the loving and sacrificial thing by telling them to stay and go back. To me, the first sacrificial act of love is not what Ruth does, but it's what Naomi does in telling them to stay. She could use them, but she's thinking about them. And I think about what Ruth says. I think about what Ruth says in verses 16 and 17, and we'll talk about this next week. Ruth makes this famous statement, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." Man, that's powerful. The logical, the thing in her best interest, Ruth's best interest at this point would have been to stay. And yet she makes this decision, I believe, in part because she has seen God at work in the life of this woman, Naomi. Because while Naomi is bitter and is hurt, she's still talking about God's involvement. She's still saying, daughters, go. May God bless you. Ruth has seen something powerful in the life of this woman living in close proximity with her for 10 years, and she's not going to go anywhere else. Faithfulness is loyalty out of love. And faithfulness will make bold decisions that aren't always easy. Ruth makes one choice. Ruth makes one choice that alters not only the course of her life and their lives, one choice, but alters and influences the course of the world and you and me. I don't know what that step might be for you or what that choice might be for you. Maybe you have some of the same questions that Naomi wondered about, but I will say this. I believe whatever you may be thinking right now, I believe God has your back. That God has your blind side. And that God values you, whoever you are, just like he valued Naomi and Ruth. And so sometimes being faithful is just about doing the next right thing, even when it's not easy. So what that next right thing for you to do, it may be to make that commitment to Jesus. You're ready to accept him and be baptized into him. Maybe you're new here. Maybe you just say, hey, I don't know what any of this is about, but I'm interested in more. I want to remind our guest here this morning that we have a guest reception area right over here after you go out these doors. And if you have a question about this church or you want to find out more about faith or living in Christ, let us know. If you're joining us online, we encourage you to do the same. Please get in touch with us. We want to help you. We want to encourage you. God has your back. God has your blind side, even when we don't always see it. And we can always praise him for that. Let's sing.